Hello, and welcome back to the Cambridge American History Seminar podcast. This week, Fergus and Marie, both PhD students here at Cambridge, talk with Dr. Stephanie Lethwaite, Associate Professor of American History at the University of Nottingham. Stephanie is a historian of Latinx art, race, and photography. She will be discussing her paper, Relational Memories, Latinx Art in New York City since 1970, which is a path-breaking examination into an understudied scene. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy.
Hey, it's Fergus here. We're back with another episode. I'm here with Steph.
Hi everybody. Thanks very much for inviting me today.
And Marie too.
Oh, hi everyone.
So if you could start by just setting the scene. It's New York in the 70s and 80s. Who are the key players in this paper? Where's it going to take us?
Yes. Well, this paper's about two artists in particular. Anna Mendieta, who came to the United States in 1961. And it's also about a US-born Puerto Rican artist called Juan Sanchez. And the paper is a little bit about their relationship in terms of how they got to know one another through the art worlds of New York. And then the majority of the paper is actually about Juan Sanchez and his development as an artist and his interaction, really, with a whole series of different artworks and art worlds in New York.
So this is a big New York story. What is it about the city that's so integral to this story? It's a kind of sanitized picture, I guess, that we get when we think about what's happening in New York alternative art. It's like art school punks, pop art, performance art, Soho. But complicating this picture, you describe a vital Caribbean Latinx underground art world. Why then are so many artists of all different stripes still traveling to the city in the 70s, especially since, as you write, it treats so many of its residents like ghosts? How should we understand New York, this great kaleidoscopic engine of opportunity and constraint?
Yes. Well, I think it is a particularly vibrant place. And I think it's also maybe an unhomely home for many Caribbean Latinx subjects, whether that's coming from Puerto Rico, from Cuba, from the Dominican Republic. And I'm really interested in New York as what Melissa Castillo-Planas calls a new Atlantic borderlands. It's really a place for collaboration. I'm really interested in this sort of relationality between artists that have a link back to the Hispanophone Caribbean. So it's particularly vibrant. And I think what we need to think about in the late 60s and early 70s is the emergence of the New Yorica movement as well. How important that is politically, culturally, how it leads to a whole series of artistic networks and artists also collaborating with poets, with musicians, etc. So it's a really, really vibrant place. So the New Yorican political and cultural movement is so important to Juan Sanchez as well. And it really informs his artwork.
So as you were saying, your monograph is going to be about this community of Caribbean Latinx artists. We know that Mendieta is Cuban-born. We know that Juan Sanchez, I think, was born in the United States.
Yes.
But he has this very strong sense of kind of Puerto Rican diaspora identity. There's also an important Dominican presence in that city. And then this artwork, as you'll discuss in your book. And could you say maybe a little more about how you understand this wider, what you call New Yorican,
am I pronouncing this right,
artwork, and how you understand the relationships between these figures and whether they're from kind of a discernible scene, as you were saying.
Yes. So I think thinking about New York as this place, this sort of, you know, artistic crossroads, really, I think is really important. And New York as well, if we take it all the way back to the 19th century, people from the Hispanophone Caribbean, they were exiles there, they were political exiles there. There's a sense in which New York is really, really important in that history. So Juan Sanchez also knows a Dominican artist called Freddy Rodriguez, who left the Dominican Republic in 1963, just after Trujillo was assassinated. They know one another. Juan Sanchez also knows Anna Mendieta. And they do collaborate in some of the same artistic spaces in New York during this period. In Soho, which is becoming increasingly, pressured and gentrified in lots of ways. There are lots of art spaces there, like the Cayman Gallery, which becomes a museum of contemporary Hispanic art. And eventually there's a series of art spaces in the Lower East Side as well. So it's really vibrant. And I think what the book is trying to do is to try and map these relations between different artists, what I use the term Caribbean Latinx, in this crossroads, this place, New York City, and to really try and unearth what I think is a really vibrant Caribbean Latinx art world that gets missed out. And to see Caribbean Latinx artists as Caribbean Latinx rather than as just Dominican, as Puerto Rican, as Cuban. There's a real debate that's going on in the art history scholarship about Latinx artists getting sidelined by the celebration of Latin American artists, for example. So I think this book is trying to really push the Latinx angle. I think it's really key.
Could you perhaps say a little more about the artwork itself, this being not the greatest medium to do it, but if you could maybe talk yes. about a couple of pieces that you think yes. are really relevant.
Yeah, so in the paper, I'm going to discuss Juan Sanchez's experimentation with what I see as a memory trope, really. Back in the 70s, he took a lot of photographs across New York City in his own neighborhood in Brooklyn. And he has this photograph of an abandoned tenement building that he took in the early 1970s. He places it at the heart of several mixed media works in the 80s and the 90s. And I think Juan Sanchez would probably call himself, I'm dealing with mixed media works in the paper, but he's a painter, he's a photographer, he's also worked with video as well, printmaker. I think printmaking is really, really critical to Sanchez's body of work. So these are really images that are trying to talk about urban disinvestment in New York, going back to the 70s, but looking at it from the perspective of the 1980s, and particularly in art spaces that are really feeling this pressure of gentrification, particularly in places like the Lower East Side.
Going back to what you were saying about mixed media and the way these artists are mixing photography and performance and painting, how significant would you say that is? Does it translate to the political message? Does it signify anything in a way to you?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think Anna Mendieta, for example, she started out in a painting program and found that it was really, really restrictive for her. So she ended up going into an intermedia program. And I think for Juan Sanchez, for him, I think this mixed media, this I will talk about his collage technique, which is actually sort of called reconstruction after this salsa album by Ray Barretta from 1979. So he uses this term reconstruction. And this idea of collage, I think, is really important because really what Sanchez is doing through reconstruction is he's excavating different layers of memory, different layers of the Puerto Rican experience back in the island, but also in New York City as well. So I think it's that it's kind of this really vibrant interaction between image and text. Is really key. And his work is deeply politicized, deeply politicized.
Especially in Mendieta's work, I was very struck looking at by some of the violence in some of the imagery. There's this famous 1973 rape scene picture. Audiences maybe today are often used to thinking that violence in art shouldn't simply be there to shock, that it's gratuitous, and that that's points against it. But here, maybe with good reason, perhaps that is the case. I think she said that it jolted the audience out of their senses. So how do you understand then the violence in her work?
Yes, so I think the violence, I mean, I'm not the only one, and there are plenty of Anna Mendieta scholars out there, is again, it's about this trauma that is cumulative, that is relational. So when she made that rape scene in 1973, she was responding to the assault and the murder of a student on the University of Iowa campus. And, you know, she also was sort of, I think, trying to discuss gender violence more broadly. But I think the blood works because I think the rape scene is part of her earlier performances, what, you know, came to be known as blood works. I think really this is about layering different memories of violence. So her own displacement and uprooting from Cuba. The sense of orphanhood that she experienced when she came over through the Pedro Pan program and was put into foster care. And then, of course, the sense of racialized otherness that she experienced in Iowa, in particular, in the Midwest, where she said she felt really out of place. So I think there are these different layers of violence, uprooting and displacement. And what I love about Anna Mendieta's work, and what many scholars say, is that she has this... Her work is about, as Genevieve Hyacinthe says, inviting others into participation, into dialogue. And I think that's what she does with so many of her performance pieces.
Bringing the story forward then, especially since the turn of the century, both of these artists have earned major retrospectives, and I've seen that Sanchez is in the permanent collections of all these major museums, the Met, the Whitney. And then in 2018, the New York Times finally publishes this Too Late by Far obituary. So what then should we make of this retroactive accommodation by major institutions of the art establishment? There's a kind of bind here in that, on the one hand, it vies against their outsider status. It's even a kind of cashing in, maybe. But on the other hand, we want these artists to reach audiences and to earn livings. How then should we understand the push-pull of, I guess, commodification here?
Yes, yeah. Well, I think there is a real dilemma that faces Latinx artists, you know, and particularly those who are, you know, do have politicized artwork like Juan Sanchez. And you're quite right. I think he's, you know, a key figure now. But I think there's a lot of work still to be done. I think this is the key thing. And I think the incorporation of artists into major museums is one thing. But there are so many other fronts on which the visibility of Latinx art needs to be worked on. So, you know, you can have museums collecting the work, you can have retrospectives. But I think there's some really key organisations out there. The US Latinx Art Forum is one that I would really mention, that's sort of headed up by Adriana Zavala. She and a lot of other art historians and curators are working really hard to get representation, Latinx representation in museum leaderships, in, you know, leadership roles, as curators, as direct museum directors. Also to get funding for artists, fellowships to sustain that, and also to ensure arts education. I think that, you know, there is a generation of art historians that are looking at Latinx art, and that there are collections. I mean, one of the key things is Juan Sanchez has his papers in the Smithsonian, the Archives of American Art. And Josh Franco is there, and he's done a massive amount of work on gathering Latinx artists' work there. So I think it's ongoing, but I think it's really, you know, it's happening, I think. But there is a dilemma, because I think there is a sense of, do you want to move into the mainstream, or, you know, and lose the fear that your political content might be diluted? And do you want to sort of go with these commercial galleries when, you know, you want to have this freedom, this autonomy? So I don't think it's a dilemma. I think it would probably be solved by having Latinx curators, museum directors and art historians alongside artists. That's my sense. So there's a way to go, but it's happening.
Yeah, I always think about kind of punk art in the 70s, and it undergoes a similar reevaluation and accommodation. And yeah, there's a similar dilemma for it to unpick.
Yes, yeah. I'm not sure I can resolve that difficulty, that dilemma. Yeah.
Speaking of which, do you know of any other artists or maybe art movements that kind of position themselves within the legacy of either that period or that kind of art scene or Mendieta or Sanchez themselves?
Yes, yeah. So Juan Sanchez is part of a chapter in the book. I also look at the Dominican artist, quite young Dominican artist called Kenny Rivero. And one of the things that I'm talking about with Juan Sanchez is that he epitomizes this barrio surrealism, you know, the idea of a neighborhood, of a, you know, specific place memory in a way. Kenny Rivero is also an artist, I think, although coming from a very different context. He talks a lot about his growing up in Washington Heights in the 1980s. He now lives in the South Bronx. And this similar politics of invisibility, spectrality. He uses, you know, these sorts of what I would call ancestral spirits and unseen, what he calls unseen worlds, to talk about trauma, to talk about urban violence, to talk about police brutality, to talk about the black ancestry, actually, of Dominicans, which sometimes gets erased, and to really link all of this experience to Black Lives Matter. And I think this is what these artists are doing. They're sort of seeking connections. They're seeking broader connections. So Kenny Rivero is also in that chapter. Other people who have worked as a legacy of Mendieta, I also look at another Dominican artist called Jory Minaya. She's a performance artist. She references Mendieta in her work. Teresita Fernandez is a Cuban diaspora artist. She also has done some work on caves, caves as a sort of a metaphor for woman's body, that kind of thing that Ana Mendieta worked with as well. So there are quite a few artists, I think, who, and of course Juan Sanchez did his own homages to Ana Mendieta beginning in the 1990s. He worked with her work, you know, in sort of this, he did a brilliant series of experimental films, I think it's from 2012 onwards, which was working with Ana Mendieta's iconography, but sort of overlaying his own, this lovely sort of, you know, dynamic interplay between the two.
Thank you. So this is kind of the meta question that we tend to ask people who come on this podcast, but how do you approach your source as a cultural historian? Like, how do you position yourself in relation to, say, an art critic, especially when it comes to arts?
I am trained as a cultural historian, and I have experience that I am. Yes, yeah. So I think I, partly because of where I work, I teach, I think I also have a bit of a cultural studies approach to this, but I have, you know, really been interested in dealing with artist testimony, looking at exhibition catalogues, seeing where, of course, people move, the networks that they make, as well as reading the images themselves, as well as trying to contextualise them. So there's a real mix, I think, in there. And I am also drawing on scholarship from memory studies. Particularly to traumatic memory. So I'm using a lot of those frameworks to talk about relational memory, multidirectional memory, connective memory, travelling memory, you know, really sort of that idea of a diasporic consciousness. But I would still say, amongst all of this, that I am an Americanist. That is one of the things that I feel. I think for me, New York is a bit similar to other cities that I might have worked on. It's a place of encounter, and that's what really, really fascinates me, those, you know, particularly cross-cultural exchanges.
One of the big trends, I guess, that's been corrected over time has been a new, more nuanced understanding of what Latinx art is and can be. What misguided, say, perceptions still prevail here?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned Adriana Zabala, and there's also Arlene Davila. They have done a lot of work to discuss really, I mean, in the 1980s and 1990s, there was a Latin American art boom, and the way that Latinx artists somehow got missed out of that. One of the key problems, and I think it's happened with Freddy Rodriguez, who was a Dominican artist, is that sometimes, if artists haven't been US born, but they've spent most of their time in the United States, there is still sometimes a tendency for them to be seen as Latin American artists, or as Cuban, or as Dominican. And that really misses out, this is what I think is so important, the experience that most of these artists have had in New York City. You know, that's where they've developed their artwork, even if they haven't been born there. So I think that is still a bit of a problem, because there is a sense, and this is what Davila and Adriana Zavala say, that Latin American art is often seen from a Eurocentric perspective. And I think there is a sense that Latinx artists that are coming to the fore now are really sort of bringing back, recuperating perhaps, histories of blackness and indigeneity that have been missed out of those narratives. And I think this is particularly important with the Hispanophone Caribbean, because you have indigenous, you have, you know, Taino, indigenous ancestry, but you also have African ancestry, as well as Spanish European. And some of that gets missed out if you go down that Latin American art route. So, and the New York experience, you know, that needs to be factored in.
You've talked, I mean, there's been a lot of art, obviously. What about, you mentioned earlier, the one album that was in dialogue with one of these artists. Is there a musical culture to unpack here?
Yes, definitely. I think really, you know, Juan Sanchez relates his method of reconstruction to Ray Barreto's Salsa album. I can't say I'm a musicologist at all, but I know that he grew up with the sounds, he said, of, you know, salsa, a whole range of Puerto Rican music, but also African-American music as well. listening to that, listening to jazz. I know that music was also a key influence on Freddie Rodriguez as well, the Dominican artist that I mentioned. So yeah, there is this real musical culture that New York City is this really vibrant place in the 70s, where salsa, merengue is becoming, you know, the Latin jazz scene, if you like. And there was a place in the Lower East Side that is now no longer there called the New Rican Village, which really was the place in the Lower East Side, you know, for listening to Latin jazz. So I think, you know, many artists would probably say that their improvisational aesthetic has also drawn on some of that music.
And lastly then, as a process question, with this in mind, is there an album you listen to when you study or write?
Oh dear.
This would be my worst nightmare.
I'm not sure.
Or the last album you listened to.
So. Oh dear.
It's a question we ask all our guests.
Do you? I don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say here. Because it doesn't relate to... I listen to a lot of classical music.
That's allowed too.
Yeah, if that's okay. As part of my working process, maybe I'm a little bit like Juan Sanchez, who often said he used to play his music as he was doing his artwork.
Right.
So I think that would probably be my go-to music for process, for writing, yeah,
that's
and
an
rewriting.
Thank you so much.
Thank
and bye.
Thank you.
Bye.